Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
6:14, going to be another beautiful day on this Thursday, March 4th. Highs near 70, nothing but sunshine, clear skies. And then tomorrow, highs of 72, warmer, but clouds move in. And you got an overnight chance for showers of 70%, but it clears out by Saturday morning. And the weekend is looking splendiferous. Highs in the mid-60s and nothing but sunshine, so get ready for that. You got to let the ground dry first if you got some yard work planned, but that should happen. We're talking about HR1 here. And we're going to examine exactly what it calls for and what it goes into. Jonathan Bidlick joins us, Interim Director of the Governance Program at the R Street Institute. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
To let our listeners know, Jonathan, I'm reading here, R Street Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy research organization dedicated to advancing center-right solutions to a variety of public policy problems. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate, yes.
There you go. All right, well, good. I got it right. Tell me about H.R. 1.
Sure. So, you know, the bill is basically a free-for-all, if you will, a grab bag of a number of ideas related to the electoral process. It would essentially impose a number of mandates on states in an attempt to standardize the voting process across the country. There are a number of provisions in there that, you know, I think, you know, you could argue could be appropriate or good at the state level. I think that the big question is whether or not they're appropriate at the federal level. There's a lot of potential harm that we can talk about that could come from that. But that's the kind of the quick high level summary.
What are some of the things that, before we get to potential harms, some of the things that it's calling for? Because people have said that part of the problem with the presidential election past is that the most recent one is that it was just a bunch of different state elections that had different laws, quirks here or there, and that's what led to so many problems. But by definition, the presidential election is 51, however many, with the D.C. and the colonies and so forth. Not colonies, but you know what I'm saying. How many different states it is that are having elections. So how do you reconcile those two with some kind of national policy?
Yeah, I mean, the bill would, you know, do all sorts of things like require same-day registration or, you know, impose, require vote by mail, all these sorts of things, which actually I should emphasize are policies that the R Street Institute supports. There's just the question of, you know, what is the appropriate level of government? And I think this is a really important question because, you know, a lot of people look at our electoral system, which is very decentralized. And I should add, by the way, that, you know, that is the way that the Constitution set out our electoral system. It was intentionally decentralized. And a big part of the reason for that is that, you know, it actually makes our electoral system far more secure. I mean, imagine if there was one centralized place where, you know, all of the election regulations kind of ran through and you had, you know, a nefarious actor, you know, whether it's someone in office or someone, you know, foreign, who wanted to go and manipulate the election. It's a lot easier to do when you have a very centralized process versus what we have currently. recently, which is, you know, people of principal and election offices at the state and county and local levels who administer the elections in their particular states or areas. And so, you know, the ability to manipulate that system is much more difficult when you have it, you know, structured in that decentralized way. And so the irony of HR1 is that by imposing these mandates and trying to centralize the electoral process, you I think quite obviously make our electoral system less secure and more prone to being manipulated in the future. And regardless, again, of the legitimacy of, you know, some of the ideas related to the voting process. And so, you know, our perspective is that the ideas are good. Let's implement them at the state level, which of course also has the advantage of, you know, if ideas don't work out, well, you know, we have the laboratories of democracy and you know, different states and localities can you know, pick up best practices from other areas and ditch ideas that aren't successful. But that's very hard to do when you impose, you know, reform in this very top-down way.
Well, you don't want to put all your ballots in one basket, do you?
I think that's exactly it. That's maybe a shorter way of saying it, but that's right.
When it comes to the states that were contested by President Trump, the ones that he lost in, and they mm-hmm. found no evidence of massive voter fraud, et cetera, mm-hmm. Were there other states that had different things going on there as well, but there was no light shone upon them because the president won those states? I guess what I'm saying is, in terms of control of the electoral system, is it mm-hmm. like Tim Russert a long time ago, Florida, Florida, Florida? Are there a handful of states? Or are there a lot more differences between states with their own election rules than really we're aware of because the focus was on four or a handful of states?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are differences. I wouldn't say that there are massive differences. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the biggest, I think, would be the usage of vote by mail. I mean, some states require an excuse, some states do not. Some states, you know, allow early in-person voting, some states do not. So there are these differences, but they're not, you know, they're not really dramatic. And a lot of times, you know, they're implemented in the way that they are, either because that's what voters in the state tend to prefer. Or it's just kind of a legacy from the way that the voting process has unfolded in different places. But, you know, some of those differences are also just due to the fact that, you know, look, I mean, voting in Montana is fundamentally going to be different than voting in New York City. And so, you know, there's that component, too, that, you know, which solutions are appropriate for different areas are oftentimes going to be different. And you have to ask yourself, who's going to know, you know, what's best in these different areas? Well, it's probably the people on the ground, right? I mean, the amazing thing about the American electoral system is that it's administered by everyday people. You know, you have a local, you know, election volunteers who are critical to the process. And that, frankly, you know, increases voter engagement, which is a huge benefit as well. And so, you know, to me, that system makes a lot of sense given the way that, you know, the country is structured.
Let me take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about maybe some limits on speech and association rights and the highlight it would put on federal courts and a spotlight that's really not needed on them. 621, we're talking to Jonathan Bitlix, interim director of the governance program at the R Street Institute, about HR1, the so-called voting rights bill. Time for traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, getting our morning started this Thursday, March 4th, with Jonathan Bitlack, interim director of the governance program at the R Street Institute. And we're talking about HR1, which is a Democratic initiative to, would it be federalized elections? Would that be accurate, Jonathan?
I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, look, it's seen as, you know, making improvements to the electoral process. And that's, you know, those are the intentions. And I think, you know, look, the intentions are good, but, you know, that's never sufficient. And I think that the practical impact would be exactly what you just described, which is that it would attempt to federalize U.S. elections.
Would that be constitutional even?
See, that's the other thing. I'm glad you raised that. You know, a lot of these types of things have been, you know, adjudicated in the courts before, particularly some of these free speech provisions. And so, you know, the odds that a lot of this stuff would end up being upheld in court, I think, is actually pretty unlikely. Now, you know, that's not to say, of course, that it wouldn't create a whole host of issues and kind of throw things into turmoil in the short term. But I do think that were it to pass, very likely would be a constitutional challenge.
Well, let me ask the question this way. Looking back on the presidential election of 2020, what needs to be fixed? And I presume you're saying it needs to be fixed at the state level, not the federal level, but what needs to be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our perspective is that it needs to be easier to vote, and it also needs to be easier to talk about who you're voting for. And so, you know, look, I mean, a lot of the reforms, I mean, you know, look, I support, you know, increasing same-day registration. I support expanding use of vote by mail. I mean, you know, look, I don't think that citizens should have to go and go to their government and get permission to determine whether or not their excuse is good enough to determine whether they should vote by mail. I mean, I think that that's actually not a conservative position at all, and that, you know, people from across the aisle should be supportive of more people participating in the electoral process. To me, those things are all good. But the other bad part that we haven't talked about yet are these free speech positions and provisions. And the issue with H.R. 1 is that it attempts to start to define what counts as political speech and then what counts as just, you know, garden variety free speech. And of course, that concept is very counter to the First Amendment. I mean, you know, the idea here is that everyone should be able to participate in the political process. And you know, as soon as you start now creating, you know, things like onerous reporting requirements for, you know, nonprofits like our own, frankly, that engage in the policymaking process, you know, the idea that is presented is that we're going to, you know, get proverbial money out of politics. But in practice, what's going to happen is that only those organizations that have the legal departments large enough to be able to abide by these sorts of regulations are going to actually continue to have their voices heard. But a lot of smaller voices are going to find it very difficult. And, you know, it's things like, you know, that may sound insignificant, but, you know, if you have to start going and, you know, filing detailed paperwork or disclosing your donors or all this kind of stuff, there's also the fact that, you know, that just creates a chilling effect on the way that political discourse occurs. And, you know, our perspective is that people should be able to engage in that process. We should be encouraging that, not you know, discouraging it and trying to make it more difficult for people to do so.
Any final thoughts, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I guess the last component to talk about is just, you know, this idea of you know, federalizing elections. They also federalize the grievance process. So, you know, they even go and say we can only go and you know, bring up concerns in the one court, and that's not the way elections should happen in this country.
I appreciate your time. I really do, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Bidlack, Interim Director of the Governance Program at the R Street Institute. We're going to take a break. We come back, we'll talk to Josh Stockley, our friend, Professor of Political Science at ULM, about a political divide in the Louisiana GOP with Senator John Cassidy voting one way, Senator John Kennedy voting the other. Of course, a very pragmatic part of this is that Senator Cassidy just won re-election to a new six-year term, and Senator Kennedy is going to have to defend his seat in the next midterms. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.